Hello, I'm Kyle Menzies.
And I'm Jason Rutherford, the creator of the Iron Man Showcase, and tonight we're talking about custom MechWarrior scenarios on the battlefield. Welcome to episode 4 of the Battlefield, the official podcast of the Online Army Showcase at army.rocklesoftware.com. And we're going to start with the first scenario. It's where a defender is defending the high ground and the attacker is attacking the larger force. So, the rules for this one is you need about 10 or 2 large pieces of elevated terrain. And this is designed to be played on a 4x4 battlefield. So, you're going to set these two large pieces up on one side of the battlefield, which doesn't not really matter too much, but you want them touching each other. Because in addition, you're going to have two bridges. Just two short bridges to connect the two hills to make the defender be able to easily move across the area they're trying to defend. And the attacker is going to set up on the opposite side of the battlefield using a standard MechWarrior Dark Age deployment zone. And the ratio of the attacker to the defender is the defender should have about 2/3 the force of the attacker. So normally we play a 600 point defender and therefore a 900 point attacker. And the rules are just that the attacker has 20 minutes of his own time to try overwhelm the defender and get in the hill. So the timer starts, and the timer's only going whenever the actual attacker player's turn it is. And therefore, once that time is up, they can complete one more action. After that one action, you count up all the DC2 points for any units that are on the hill. Whoever has the most points wins the match. Pretty simple. Just overwhelming force is try to go ahead and storm.
It requires a lot more strategy than most other scenarios.
And that time is really crucial. Like as mentioned, we usually play with 20 minutes. Now that's obviously because we usually play with our modified rules that we talked about back in episode 1. So if you're playing with the traditional Dark Age rules, you may actually need to give yourself a little bit more time, just because under our rules, one action allows movement and firing. Plus some of the extra running and additional transport rules and things like that. But so with that, is the terrain deployment. The defender, in addition to these two large hills and two bridges that connect them, he can place up to 4 other pieces of terrain according to standard MechWarrior Dark Age rules, which of course is obviously about 3 inches apart from any other pieces of terrain, including these large hills. And you can't place any terrain on top of these hills. No making a little wooded armory there. You can hide like a nice camouflage unit just raining artillery down people.
But that'd be fun.
That would be fun.
Too bad.
Too bad. But yeah. All right. So let's get started here. Let's have Kyle talk about his defensive, his 600 point defensive force.
All right. Right now I focused on more armor piercing and just long range abilities to bear down on the enemy to keep them from advancing in time to take the hill. First off, I took out Yuri Wolf, who is a 167 point figure. His specialty is they can fire at 16 inch range and can keep the attacking force from coming up too close. Next I have is standard for almost all my armies is Behemoth Killbox, we call it. The Behemoth is accompanied by 2 Hawbrooks, which are placed next to each other, allowing for the Behemoth to have a +4.
Yep, we +4 it.
+4 to the attack, and at its peak, it does up to 5 damage armor piercing. Finally, another important part of this scenario is the artillery.
The DS tanks?
Yes, they also do, of course, armor piercing, keeping anybody who has actual any kind of armor, away from me. Very important. And that is about it, except for this last group, which would be important if I had placed buildings, especially on part of my 4 pieces of our field. These three pieces right here are all streaking abilities, and so when the attacking force is behind those buildings, it allows for him to attack them without being attacked back under our rules, unlike the indirect fire in WizKids rules.
And what figures are those?
These are 2 LRM batteries and also a Jesse II missile carrier.
And what about, you also got, it looks like you got a couple suspended infantry scattered about here. Who are the, what are you going to do with those little guys?
Oh, yeah, I almost forgot about them. Thanks. These three little guys are all just trike squads, used just to harass the enemy. They're not there to, you know, survive. They're basically sacrificial lambs. They're out there to die and keep, and hopefully hold the line for a couple minutes, allow some more time to pass before the enemy can advance further. This could also be used for transporting them up there, but I prefer just to try and heal as much as I can. Those steel wolves are often unable to repair too much.
Right. The last thing with your defensive strategy, what terrain would you deploy, and about kind of how would you arrange it out? Like, you want to use?
I would often place.
Pull some stuff out of our house back there.
Some of these custom buildings, which we put in groups of five or four?
Usually five. Four, five, four, six, not particular. But
not particular, but, and then I would put these often almost right in front of the, not almost right in front, but I'd usually cover the flank on one side, one of the, you know, islands, you know, little hills,
mm-hmm.
to keep them from outflanking me and allow my force to take one side and pound the crap out of them, while the streaking happens on the other side.
And just for a little size reference here, the these little building cubes are about 2 inches by 2 inches. So obviously a five length one's about 10 inches by 2 inches. That's around this, maybe a little bit bigger lengthwise, about a B2 building, and a little bit narrower. So I believe the B2 is like 8 by 3 or something. But
so. Should we go on with your force, or continue with?
Well, I'll go ahead and talk about my offensive strategy here. So I'm playing the 900-point force, and of course I have my bands and raiders. So the main anchor of the force is going to be Cita Moreno here. And one other little rule I forgot to mention in the first episode about our custom rules. The old mechs that are prior to Age of Destruction that don't normally are allowed to have any kind of gear, we actually allow them to have gear. Unique mechs cannot have a pilot, but they can have two pieces of gear, where a non-unique mech can have either a pilot or a gear or two pieces of gear. So the reason I chose Cita Moreno is the dual 14-inch range weapons. And of course, under our rules, mechs can fire both their weapons in one turn. She can do 7 damage at 14 inches, plus, she actually has some fairly decent streak missiles to counter his little battery of streaking crap over there. And the additional bonus I gave her is reactive armor. She has a nice, decent defense and nice attack, but she has no armor at all. So that'll help her, obviously give her significant longevity to her.
Unless my artillery comes down upon her.
Unless artillery, or anybody that has armor piercing for that matter. Your behemoth.
Everything else.
But no, the trike squads.
Yeah, they have armor piercing.
Loud. Okay. So anyway, in addition, now I've got two of my own kill boxes, which are the Banzer Raiders. Those consist of an M1 marksman tank and a pair of Hallbrooks for a total of 14 attack at 14 attack, 14 inches for 4 damage, armor piercing. And this, then we got a pair of helicopters here. It's actually dual lampreys.
Just annoyances.
The real annoyance is what they carry inside them. Each lamprey obviously is a one-person infantry transport, and therefore each lamprey is going to carry a Ravager battle armor in them, which is a 19-point infantry piece that has a 19 defense with reactive armor. You get these guys. The idea of these is to basically rush the hill, get up there, drop off your infantry. Now they've got one. They have two guys on the hill that are going to cause them trouble. Just they got to focus a little bit of firepower on them. So even if they die, they've maybe lost almost a turn or two of firepower trying to take these two guys out. And that leaves the rest of the units, specifically Cita and the various M1 divisions, to come up and concentrate firepower on some of the heavy units and take them down. Then he's got some infantry here, just a group of four cage battle armor. Just kind of race up, tie people up, pin them down, and hold them in place. We got some energy infantry then. One of my few energy weapons on the field, with the exception of Cedar Moreno, is we've got a Kanazuchi battle armor in the middle and a pair of Raiden battle armor. So that gives them a nice small formation, kind of slow, but they've got some nice energy damage to heat the mechs up and also just kind of harass them a little bit. And the last unit, and possibly my most favorite for this kind of battle, is the Solitaire. Only 100 points, but it has 14 movement, evade, and a 20 defense. And under our rules, a 10-inch range, it can do 7 points of damage if it fires both its weapon systems. And to make things even better, we give it a graduate certificate for 9 points, boosting up its attack by 1 and defense by 1. And that gives it now 10 attack and 21 defense, plus it has evade its first click for 23, and ensure that it has evade the rest of its dial. The full blown out. So that way I give the evade light equipment card to give it evade for the rest of its dial. And therefore that makes it a really fast, big harasser that can do a lot of damage up close. And the last staple for my army, as any Banser Raider army should be, Banser Raider Faction Pride. It's a pure faction army, only costs you 30 points for this 900 point army, allows you to prepare 1 point each turn, and that can just be enough to turn the tide of a battle, especially with the when we get into these wars of attrition, like in our larger battles.
With your defense, it works a lot better for you, though.
Because before, I used to have a repair unit. So if someone took a hit, they have to run back and try to get repaired. With this, it allows them to stay in the front lines maybe a turn or two more and makes them significantly more effective. In addition, obviously, faction prize can be used once every 450 points, 900-point army, 2 clicks of repair each turn. So that's my basic rundown of my offensive army. So why don't you go ahead and you have your 900-point offensive army and talk about that a little bit.
Well, main force has to always consist with the big baller. Sika Ward is my choice with this. She's got command, alpha strike, and armor. No armor piercing, but she's got some streaking capabilities also. Along with jump jets makes her a very, very hard target to face. Then up next is, the trike squads again. These little things can just harass, and let me put it clearly, harass. So they will annoy any force while they're circling around the whole medium while everyone else is running up. But to give them some protection, I put them in a maximum MK2 transport. With some reactive armor, provide some good protection against the oncoming fire. Next up we have is, back to the basics, the Behemoth Kill Box. Though slow and cumbersome, it can provide some nice cover fire to anybody advancing to them, hills. And next we have, I had some extra points and decided to put just a very big nuisance. This is a Tora Zephyr. Though she starts off at 0 for her ability to do damage and 0 for her attack, it quickly goes up to 3 damage armor piercing along with a 14 inch range and evade. She can run up there at the last minute and take part in the hill and give me some nice V2 points. Next we have is Shinwolf. Shinwolf is very nice for being a Euler and can do some 4 damage armor piercing and a 10 inch range with evade. So run him up. So he's got basically a 24 inch range to shoot at some people and hopefully live long enough to see the hill. Next part of my little strategy here is to get to the hill as fast as I can, as you can see. I brought along a J12A1 attack APC, something I haven't used a lot lately, but it provides some nice cover and allows me to rush up at the very last minute and try to take the hill.
Does that one have repair for the infantry on it? It's a little plus symbol next to his tack down there?
No.
What's on his attack? Is that blue? I can't tell.
Right. What do you mean? Right here?
Yeah. Or,
oh, at the top?
No, they... Yeah.
Wait.
Oh, look at that catch. Yeah, it's got green there. It can repair anybody.
It can repair anybody. Because
it's got the little attack symbol. It's like it'd be there for tree or vehicles, even though it's just... Go figure that one out.
I can repair
That's your assignment for this week.
So I can actually run him up behind infantry, like these doggies here. I prefer to call them doggies, but they're Fafnirs. Fenrirs. Yeah, Fafnir is a 100-ton mech. No.
Operation of Fafnirs coming to the hill.
Ah, crap. Yeah, everyone would be dead then, but then there might be a problem with the rules, and you would claim that I was doing something illegal.
400-ton mechs and a 900-point army. Well, get creative. It's creative bookkeeping.
No, and they would do a nice job of just coming up there, taking some nice damage, maybe repaired by the attack APC under bent rules.
They're legitimate rules, they're just odd.
Kind of like the 2 damage of the anti-personnel artillery I have that they had to change later on because they thought it was
a little effect. They really never used their, yeah, kind of like that. Some of those odd quirks about this game.
Well, and then you would think this was another MK2 personnel transport, but in fact this is Miko's Wolf. He goes a little bit faster than his brother and does a lot more damage. So to help with that, I put in some Cavalier battle armors along with Taurus Claw, which is another unique unit, which allows me to do 3 damage armor piercing and has jump jets. So this group can be transported in, jump on top of the hill, and can just annoy the crap out of any defending army that possible. And along with that, I have another repair vehicle, which will allow for longevity and allow me to last a little bit longer. But still, a little special ability allows them to get better as they, you know, take more damage. To help with that, I didn't bring along my Steel Wolves faction card, but that's another 30 points, but allows me to deal out 1 damage to any unit I want, and allow me to get better, actually.
Yeah.
Think of a logic
usually,
with that.
Usually. Just take your guys off, stick them in the back of the cattle prod, keep moving. I don't know, you got any better ideas?
Drunk them up, maybe?
That's true, the stim packs. I don't know how those things work, but...
Yeah, apparently they do better.
Yeah.
All right. What's next on the agenda?
Well, I got my defensive army here. So first I'm going to talk about my terrain deployment. So let's get the Sacred Ward off the hill. This is going to...
Come on, Sacred Ward would take the hill in no time.
Actually, she did in our one game where...
Oh, yeah, that's right. She was the last one.
1 second left. She charged the hill, got in the hill, and won the darn game for him. 1 second left. Which is why keeping exact time, the attacker's time, is very important. So, be very, very, very specific with that clock.
Alright, so what did you bring today for your defensive army and the train deployment?
First, unfortunately, I don't have 2 of my little orchard tile pieces. This is the H2 hindering terrain, the 10-inch by 3.5 inches. But I want to set them up. Each, but they're up the minimum 3 inches away from the hill. Let's say that's just one for your purpose.
You still need 3 inches in between.
That's
though.
True.
Something like that?
Yes. So you got 2 pockets of hindering terrain. And the reason for that is the backbone of my defensive army is a pair of my M1 and Hauberk kill boxes. And the M1 tanks have camouflage to them. So one of the first, probably the first turn, you want to get them off the hill into the hindering terrain. Or therefore, park there gives them a nice 23 defense. So they're just going to sit there, and anyone else who tries to approach them will be basically immediately targeted and shot on with 2 Gauss rifles at 14 inches of 14 attacks. Sounds like a fun little formation. And therefore, my next 2 pieces of terrain are going to need something that's maybe about 15 inches away from the front of this hindering terrain. So I don't know whether it be a building or maybe just for kicks, probably put some water in there or something just so he has no And therefore, he has to charge across a bunch of open ground into what's initially a two massive gauze rifles. And then, occupying the main portion of the hill will be a Targe. And I give this little guy the graduate certificate.
Not this annoyance.
The graduate certificate medium class for 14 points, which gives it a plus one attack and plus one defense.
Not what it needs, that plus one defense.
Nope. That means on the hill, 23 defense. So long as he sits there, his long range 14 inch weapon is not super powerful, only does it's 2 damage in this particular version, but the 10 inch range weapon is 4 damage and energy, so that guy with a 10 attack and 22 defense when he's on the ground, 23 in the hill, can become a problem. And 10 inches will allow him to get anywhere he needs to really, really quickly. See, and then obviously, to keep the enemy moving, nothing better than what was initially probably the embodiment of everything that was wrong with artillery and fire for effect, Kenny Medchuk. Sitting back here in this 36-inch range, dropping 2 tokens, 2 armor-piercing damage each, just constantly firing down on
you. Good thing I got a lot of fast-moving guys.
Yeah,
so.
Pretty much.
But you forget, though, if you screw up too much, it can come back to haunt you.
Oh, yeah. I just hit, like, out of curiosity, these guys with 2 damage to them, your little Fenrirs. And now they don't change speed, better attack. But they do breach their reactive armor. So
he's got armor piercing.
Yep, 2 tokens, 2 damage each. Seika now, on the other hand, well, 1, 2, getting better. 6. Oh, jeez. So if I were to hit her, 2 damage would boost her to a 10 attack, 21 defense. 6 damage streak, then you use your turn, use your command, single use, and now you've got 11 attack, 6 damage streak, and a 22 defense with heavy armor, therefore negating any purpose of me hitting her with the artillery.
Nice little thing about Steel Wolves.
Yes. So, that's some one unfortunate side effect of Kenny, but, you know, just gonna keep wearing him down. Now you got this little oddball division, which consists of 3 SRM teams, back in the Fire for Effect days. And those will form a little kind of triangle in front with an elite infantry unit in back. The elite infantry unit obviously has point defense, gives them all a nice 18 defense. They move along at 7 inches. And then for kicks, I just went ahead and attached on a clan battle armor here off the side. Because the clan battle armor obviously has the 2 damage armor piercing, not armor piercing, 2 damage anti-personnel. So some of his little formations, like his little trike squads here, we can kind of rip those apart. Hopefully fairly quickly. Unfortunately, the reactive armor will absorb any damage from the anti-personnel attack of the clan battle armor, but the SRM teams have armor piercing.
You could hit the Zephyrwinds at the
first
click.
Total waste anti-personnel, but I could do that. How much, what does it do to it after 2 clicks?
Puts her on a peak. 8 attack, 18 defense, 14-inch range with evade, 3 damage armor piercing.
I won't do that. And obviously, another little piece here, the Ravager Battle Armor. I only got 1 this time, but it just needs to run out there. It can die pretty quickly. It's just got to buy maybe one or two turns.
Kind of like how these guys were for me.
Yeah, pretty much. And that leaves me, oh, actually, also, as before, never leave home without your faction pride. This time being only 20 points because it's a small army. And unfortunately also, even though it's 600 points, we still only get to have 1 repair. That's alright. And that leaves, all these guys leaves me 7 points short of the total of 600. So just for kicks, I tossed in 1 little standard foot for 7 points to hide back there and just die at some point. Or just hold the hill for at least 7 points.
Yeah, so hopefully you guys won't be drunk like that one time.
Battle armor, peasant company, critical mass. We won't mention that at the moment. We'll discuss this.
What am I talking about? Color army crap.
Yes, technical army crap, that thing.
Alright, but back to what we were talking.
Back to what we were talking about, which actually, that's just about it for the little hill taking strategy, or hill taking scenario. So I think the next thing I want to talk about for fun, let's go ahead and actually create a scenario here on the fly and see if we can come up with some ideas. And all the only thing we really decided on first was that it's going to be a canyon ambush scenario. So we're going to have, obviously, the attacker doing the ambush, and the defender is going to have to escort some kind of convoy out of the
What could we use for the combo?
Well, that's a good question. I'm thinking probably in addition to whatever the actual build totals would be, probably let the defending player choose maybe two or three of their own APCs.
So maybe something like this if I was the defending.
You had a couple of those, that'd be a good choice. Or, you know, have any little fast APCs. So you have no real idea what they're transporting. Could be persons, could be
weapons.
So just for kicks and for... Did I actually do that?
Came pretty close to something I didn't want to get hit with.
So just for kicks and convenience purposes, let's say the canyon is
30 inches wide.
30 inches wide.
Well, that's a huge canyon.
That is a fairly huge canyon, but I mean, you can always make it that smaller. The reason it's 30 inches wide for the people who are listening to the audio podcast, the table we're currently filming in front of is 30 inches wide.
Makes it easier than building our own canyon, I guess.
But I actually do have canyon pieces back in my parents' house where they're kind of like our normal little elevated terrain, but they're actually 4 feet long and designed to be stacked on top of each other. But we can discuss that stuff a little bit later.
Alright.
So I guess the question is, what would be a good objective? Obviously, the defending player has to get the convoy out of the canyon. What about the offensive player?
Defensive player would probably have to, I'd say, take a percentage of the convoy alive, I'd say, you know, not destroy
it. Capture it.
Capture it. You know, require it to, you know, maybe get down to at least half its clicks, I would say, you know, just so that, you know, you can take it. Either that or, you know, just kill everybody and then point at gunpoint saying you're coming with me.
Yeah. So you could say, like, what if, in addition to where they either have to reduce damage, maybe say, make it like, you know, like a point system in terms of victory points. Maybe their main objective should be actually try to capture the convoy. Physically, you can do a capture attack on it and pin each of them down. That'd be the most points. Say maybe they get 2 points each for that. So just basically make up numbers when you design these victory points. And let's say maybe they salvage them. But they still survive the battle. Each player splits 1 point each because the truck got away, but it was pretty heavily damaged. And maybe if the defending player gets the truck off the field, say they get the full 2 points.
How about we could also include if they take too long, you know, the defending army starts, you know, getting reinforcements.
I was actually thinking along that line too, actually. before we decide that, we gotta decide what about how should the points be distributed? We really don't want just two. Here's 2,000 point armies. Have a slugfest in a small little area.
Yeah, that's not right.
So, go ahead. What were you gonna say?
What I was gonna say is, you know, you'd have to have a certain amount of, depending on what you'd want actually in the convoy, you know, weapons or personnel. But the convoy would not be, you know, having anything this big, like a 90 ton mech. Yeah, you know, defending it.
Well, so, it depends if it's a high-ranking official, maybe.
No, even then, that's still, you know, pretty big, you know, amount of, you know, expenditure, pretty much, for something like that, when there's battles going on everywhere else.
So you say you're suggesting limiting the maximum point value of any given unit for the defender?
Yeah.
So maybe 200 points? Just pick a number.
Yeah, 200 points is fine. It doesn't matter. Just, you know, something to keep it from, you know, going outrageously, like bringing out Jeff Becker, who can just stand in front of everybody taking hits while the convoy gets away.
So, I'd say the defending player should have, overall, a smaller amount. Maybe, say, 800 points, maybe 1,200, or 1,000 to 1,500. Just, you know, it's a lot of, you know, obviously I've played the thing a few times and tweaked some stuff. But the reason why the attackers have more is initially, the defenders will actually outnumber the attackers on the field. So the defenders are going to start, you know, we'll say the cannon be 48 inches long, so ideally you can play this on a 48 by 48 inch table, which is our understanding gaming size. So the defenders start, you know, maybe in a 12 inch square at the one end, and the attackers start in a 12 inch square at the other end. And then the defenders are trying to move out and to give them encouragement to keep moving. After a certain random amount of turns, the attackers, where the ambush player comes in, gets reinforcements back in the defender's deployment zone.
So would the reinforcements come from the top of the canyons? Like more of an ambush kind of?
That would work, you know, starting maybe on the edge of the canyons, maybe the last 12 inches from the back on the two sides of the canyon, so Therefore, the defender wants to keep moving and tries to inflict a lot of damage on the front line force of the attackers and try to bust through that before the defender just kind of
tries to circle around them. And
that seemed pretty good.
So the question then is, how long should we determine before the attackers get the reinforcements? I know the one thing we've done before, the one thing that's actually, I got this idea way back from the Classic Battletech source book, is where you roll dice, and that's got to be, say, less than or equal to the number of the current turn. So,
yep.
As we've done before, we say you roll 3 dice, and if that number, the total is less than, 16. The total is less than or equal to the current turn number, that's when his reinforcement starts coming in. So, that, obviously the probability
chance of getting out in the third turn is really low.
Yes, so the defender would probably have maybe 7 to 8 turns to actually inflict a sizable amount of damage on the attacker's army before he has to worry about guys coming behind and trying to desperately defend off a second force behind
him. You might need a bigger, field size, though, than 48 inches, because, after 2 turns, sure, we have to, stop and, fire upon them.
Line up, on command, fire! Reload. It's Revolutionary War all over again.
Okay. But, it would only take up, about 6 turns for them to be able to, 7 turns to get pretty much almost off the field.
That's true. So maybe you try 2 dice instead of 3?
I think that would be a much better idea.
I think it probably depends on the size of the cannon. If we do go with the 48 inch long cannon, maybe 2 dice. But maybe you beef it up to 6 feet.
Yeah.
Or you could also possibly say, if you say do a full 6-foot canyon, which is probably about the length of this table here, the attackers don't actually start right at the very end. They maybe they start maybe 1.5 feet in, they have like 1 foot in, and their deployment zone's a foot in from that point. So their front lines are actually at 4 feet.
And the attackers automatically get the first move, no matter, what happens, because they're causing an ambush and everyone else is not really aware of this.
Mm-hmm. So I would say, in addition to the obviously 6 victory points, 2 potential for each transport, you need 1 more for a potential tiebreaker, which is probably just the sheer amount of damage done. Just do VC1 victory conditions. Whoever eliminates the most number of the opposing forces gets that 1 point. So therefore, a total of 7 points, it's not going to, should not end up as a tie, because 7's odd and you can't split a half a point. So, yeah.
Except in Jason's world, where odd numbers can become anything.
It's my math skills for you, as I mentioned earlier in the first episode. I can't add. I guess let's do the quick recap of what we're going to go with. The canyon salt, maybe 6-foot table the most, let the attackers start in. We got to decide how many points the attackers get initially. So maybe they should get... What's the ratio first? Say the defenders get 1,000 points plus their 3 transports.
1,000 points? That's a pretty big army. So I would say, yes, I know you do. I'd probably say, though, only about, 500 to 600. Just give them, because it's not enough to overtake them, but it'd be enough to annoy the heck out of any, army and cause them to stop and, start firing back.
So, let's say 600. So it's maybe about just shy of 2/3 of what the defender player gets initially. And then maybe another 800 points or hiding off the... Or maybe 600, 800 points. I say 800 just because...
300 maybe on each side, and then each side will have... we could roll 1 dice to determine, odd or even, which side, will, come out first.
Okay.
And then the, other side will automatically, the next time you roll it, and it's less than that turn.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll still give it opportunity, but having one side come in 1 turn and then the other side come in...
So it's like... they gotta start peeling over this way, defending this flank, and then the guys from the left flank come in. Then it's just kind of like you send a few guys back to try not to die or to hold them off as long as they can. They finish pushing the main force back off the table.
Yeah, I think that'd be the best possible way for you know, both sides to, you know, have at least a slight chance.
Mm-hmm. I think that worked pretty good. The one other suggestion I would have would say the defender player should get maybe one or two additional orders. However, these additional orders have to go to the convoy trucks.
Okay.
So even if it's just, well, either they go to the convoy trucks or they're wasted. So you can set the convoy trucks stationary. But this way, you know, since you don't have to worry, you can worry about fighting your war, but not have to worry too much about the convoys just getting stranded in the back and being crippled because you have less orders than what you're facing off against up front. And also, the defenders should not be able to have any artillery. You don't have artillery on patrol duty.
Unless you're going to capture the artillery.
Unless you're going to capture the artillery, yeah, but... Dude, what about... Do you think attackers should have... They might have artillery.
Well... That's unless it's in the armies that are the 300 points, but it'd be only like one.
Yeah.
Even then, doesn't seem plausible. Just in, you know, the sheer fact that they would probably have to do a hit and run.
Mm.
So it's more likely than not that they would not have artillery in this kind of situation.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, probably no artillery for either player then.
Most likely not. Artillery would be too annoying.
Yeah, it would be too annoying. So I guess that's pretty good for that little rule set. So you got about a 6-foot battlefield, defender deploys within a foot square on the one side of the table, the attacker deploys a foot in and has a foot deployment zone there. So 1,000 points to the defender, plus say 3 APCs of his choice, whether it's hover, doesn't matter what APCs you want to choose. The attacker then gets 600 points.
That's
his starting point.
So we get 600 points at the starting.
600 points to start, yes.
And then 300 on each side, which will be determined when they come in based on the rolling of the dice.
60 pounds.
So, okay, yeah, so you start, obviously, turn one, start the turn counter up, and then at the beginning of each turn, you
roll this one first to determine odd or even.
Okay,
even.
So
that would be the right side in this
case.
Okay,
so I see what you're saying, yeah.
And then we'll just say it's
a 1-on-2 dice. So the 300-point army comes in on the left flank there and starts its attack, and then...
Wouldn't that be the right flank?
Left flank for the defenders. Right flank if you're going to be the attacker, so I guess the defenders...
All the defenders will be going this way, so it'll be the right flank.
Well, I guess the question, I think we're probably looking at the battlefield from our perspective. I'm thinking the defender's going this way towards that side of the table.
I'm thinking about
going this
defender's
way.
Running away.
Running away.
Well, even though the fact of the matter is they're being hit, they still want the convoy to stay secure. So even though some of them would, you know, fall back and, you know, try and take out these guys, the rest of them still have to cover the convoy.
Yeah, but I think the convoy would try to get, because back here the enemy's coming in, you're kind of stuck both ways. I'd imagine that'd be the weaker force, they could try to...
I'm just saying whenever you're doing a convoy, you still want to stay with the convoy, even if you're going back to take out some enemies.
Okay, well, I guess it all depends, right flank, left flank, depending on what your perspective is what it comes down to.
Just like everything else in life.
Yes, everything else in life. So, with that, I guess that's just about it for that little scenario rules. Obviously, get your convoys off. 2 points for the defender for each convoy truck that makes it off that's not salvaged. If it's salvaged and makes it off, each side gets 1 point. And then if the attacker captures the convoy, they'll get 2 points. And then whoever has the most VC 1 points to end the game gets one more point. Obviously, best out of 7 points there wins the scenario. And if I got a few minutes here, or in coming days, I'll actually create a page on the Army Showcase and post it up on there for you guys to see the full rules of the scenario.
And maybe post a picture if you can get a chance to?
If I could, because I mean, I said way back in episode 2 when I did the Elizabeth Temple, I said I was going to post a tutorial on how to build that. And yeah, that's been now about 3 weeks and that still hasn't materialized yet, but give me some time, I'm awfully busy. But I guess... Well, that's about it for the MechWarrior discussion. I just want to bring up a few topics of some of the episodes I'm actually working on for the future episodes of Battlefield. I actually went to a local hobby store that's closing near us and picked up some actual Star Wars miniature pieces for the Star Wars miniatures game, which I've never played before. So I always kind of saw it as a very simplistic rule set and wasn't never really interested to me, but hey, it's up 40% off. I'll go ahead and pick up a box set and a booster pack, so I got those upstairs, and in a future episode, I'd like to just do a review of it and kind of discuss how the gameplay works out, and I'll see if you want to give it a try sometime, and we'll go from there.
Anything else?
Yeah, before there, I got ideas lined up like crazy, but just the top few of them. Also, along the lines of Star Wars miniatures, maybe like to try out the Star Wars miniature space combat game. I've never played it before, no idea what it's like, but, you know, try it out, do a review of it on the show. Maybe I'll go back and visit some terrain building ideas for some of the mech warrior stuff, like how to build some of these nifty little hills we got, or our lakes.
Much cheaper than you can get on eBay.
Yeah, always much cheaper to build yourself. And at some point, I'll go back and talk about how I build a little buildings and the specific rules we use for those. Still working on getting that Babylon 5 episode together, just like getting a hold of some of the local players, which is kind of tough since the main store that... The other store that hosts the Babylon 5 kind of closed down as well. It's kind of a rough time around here for...
Yeah, that's
for miniature wargame stores. As I mentioned in the last episode about little extra uses for old mechware pieces, there's a ton of that coming up in a few episodes.
Many ideas.
Yes, many ideas. And also, the one store that's currently closing, it's 40% off everything, has a box set of the Starship Troopers game by Mongoose Publishing.
Starship Troopers?
Yeah. It's all, I mean, if they, maybe they, it's like, every other single item in the aisle of miniature games basically cleared out, except for Starship Troopers and all the related Starship Trooper items. It's a game by Mongoose Publishing who makes the Babylon 5 Call to Arms game. So I'm thinking, well, I might as well maybe give it a try here, and if it's still there the very last day the store's open, maybe I'll buy it and just...
But you saw the movie, didn't you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the movie wasn't that bad. I enjoyed the movie.
Well, I guess. I mean, giant bugs eating people is fun.
Yeah. So, I imagine it'd probably be much like play out like a Warhammer-style game like Warhammer 40K, but we'll see what happens. And, of course, I want to try out the Lord of the Rings, the Mines and Moria starter kit that, Games Workshop puts out, so probably want to get that, paint the figures up, and do a review on that. And I can do reviews and all sorts of other crazy ideas, but I'll stop there for the new episode's ideas. And a few of the little notes, I've submitted our RSS feed for this podcast to dig.com's podcast section. So if you're a member of dig.com, go ahead, dig us up, go search the battlefield, and dig us up, ladies. And see if we can improve our rankings. We're only 15,467 behind Dignation. Hey!
Nice! We're getting up there. Yeah.
And also, the Battlefield is available on Bloglines. You can search Battlefield there and get our RSS feed if you use Bloglines. And the last thing is, some of you noticed, I pushed out a little demo video because I got of how to use it on the Norman Showcase. I've got some software that should, at least it said, it can convert the video into an iPod video format. I'm not 100% sure if that does work. I don't have an iPod video. I actually bought the Creative Vision M for the one reason that it was not the iPod video. But that's a whole other discussion altogether. So, with that, I'm Jason Rutherford, and you can get a hold of me at jason@rocklesoftware.com.
I'm Kyle Menzies, and you can get me at kyle@rocklesoftware.com, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, have a good night, and I'll see you on the battlefield. Typewriter 2007, Rocko Software, MechWarrior, BattleTech, Mech, and WizKids are trademarks of WizKids Incorporated. Intro music provided by the band The Transfer and was acquired from www.podsafeaudio.com.